It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey.
So how was your Christmas?
Well, Christmas is over. The tree's packed up. The presents are all put away. It's great.
But it hasn't happened yet. This is a pre-Christmas, post-Christmas airing podcast.
I know, but I was...
So prophetically, how was it?
Prophetically, it was awesome. Prophetically, had a great time. We had people here, children here, grandkids here.
Did you deck the halls?
You know me, my favorite time of the year.
Get the decks on.
We got halls decked. I decked the Millers, too, across the street.
You got awesome. Yeah.
I decked all kinds of people.
Ooh, yeah, baby.
This is what I like. I tell you what I like about Christmas is Christmas Day. My family's be over here opening presents and doing all that. Friday, when this is airing, I'm on my way up to see my folks and spend some time up their place playing in the snow.
We're going to be up there, too.
We're going to have to throw
snowballs.
So, yeah, when are you going up?
Saturday.
Well, we'll be up there Friday.
Woo-hoo.
And we're leaving Monday. So,
okay.
There you go. You'll be up skiing every day. No, we're not.
We're just going to sled. Too much work right at the moment.
Oh, okay.
Other things to do.
Well, we have to follow up our Baby Blues comic from last week. You remember the poor boy standing
on
the tradition?
Tradition.
It's French for boredom. That very day in the paper, and I hadn't read the paper that day, or we would have had this comic on last week, too. This is Baby Blues again. They're still in line to see Santa Claus, and the young boy, the toddler boy, is not happy. He says, well, do we have to do this? And his mom looks at him and says, yes,
because we have to.
Their Christmas picture is all the kids with Santa Claus.
Absolutely.
So that's
we
it. So,
have to do
so
it.
She looks at him holding the littlest baby in her arms. Yes. And she says, we've had your pictures taken with Santa since you were all babies. It's a tradition. We're going to continue. And they both turn around. The little boy's arms together. He's just mad. And the little steam's going out of the mother. She's mad, too. And the little boy looks up and goes, because it makes us happy? And she screams at him, that's right. This guy's got it going, I'm telling you. This guy, that is the whole Christmas deal right there. Tradition.
We have to, because it makes us happy.
I've always thought kids were the canaries in the mine shaft of the body of Christ. You know, if kids are bored with the tradition, you can bet most of the parents are, too. There's about 10 parents in there that are so nostalgic for these certain kinds of rituals. They keep dragging everybody else along. But the most important thing I learned growing up about sitting, quote-unquote, in church on Sunday morning was how not to act bored, not to roll your lifesavers down the hardwood floor to the front of the... Not to crinkle your candy paper. Not to make any... Shh! Be quiet. And that's basically all you saw.
God wouldn't have any fun with lifesaver races.
It captures it perfectly. It's just, yes, we're happy. Doggone it. Be happy.
You know, I think when people try to get their sense of value or their sense of worth, or they want to try to somehow feel good about themselves, most oftentimes they are trying to turn to something that can generate that.
Yeah.
If I'll do this, then I'll somehow feel better. I can't just sit on the couch and feel loved. That takes it too far. You didn't earn that. And I think at the end of, I don't know that anyone goes through the math in their brain.
Yeah, I don't think anybody thinks they're earning it by going. Some do, but I don't think most do.
No,
most
I don't think most people do. But it's like, gosh, if the things that we do become the source of our value and identity, those become dangerous for you.
Hmm.
If you don't get that apart from what you do. I mean, I remember, back to my little, slip on the dog slope thing. That's not going to mean things to a lot of folks unless they heard that story.
Yeah, but that's back on podcast number 172.
Yeah, whatever, many years back. But the reality is, I remember a point at which it was sort of like God decided to help me separate that kind of math computation, that somehow my love was derived from stuff and things I achieved did. And he's saying, no, it's not. And if you want to belabor that sense of religious obligation, those get jumbled. If I don't do these, then I will feel bad. I mean, I remember when...
And you're supposed to feel bad. That's the deal.
Well, yeah, the system goes, no, no, you're not doing this stuff, therefore you are guilty.
You are wrong.
As charged.
One guy said to me recently in an email, just a fellowship thing they'd been a part of, and he'd been part of a very productive group there, and then felt like God had asked them to step out. There were things they needed to learn. He said, every time I have this pastor guy, who used to be my very, very close friend, I feel like I'm naughty. I feel like I'm doing something bad. And... in fact, he's being told he is. You're doing something bad. You've abandoned something, and so
because
you are.
The person leading it is feeling personally offended that, what, I'm not valuable anymore because you're not attending the thing that I lead and do?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think anyone has the courage oftentimes to look at it like, is that possibly what's happening in my emotions here? As opposed to playing the God card, is it possible that perhaps if someone doesn't go to what I am leading – that perhaps I personally am feeling rejected. No, 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 no. It's that they have departed from us.
The faith.
They're forsaking the assembling. Maybe they just are supposed to be someplace else, or maybe they just wanted to be someplace else, and that's okay.
Maybe they graduated. Maybe they got all they needed to get from what God's doing in your life. Does the friendship end when the dependence ends? If you're no longer dependent on me, for your spiritual life and growth, and you're just growing on in a great way, is that somehow minimizing who I am if this just goes on to a friendship?
No, frankly, that's where the friendship should begin.
You would hope.
You know, you think of the family structure growing up in the family. The real friendship happens when the children leave home and there is the continued desire for relationship.
Yes.
That's when real friendship happens.
And that's when parenting has been successful.
Yeah.
It's not when you got your kids to do everything you want them to do.
I mean, one of the things I recognized in doing church is it was exactly that. It's like, when do people graduate? When will they have gotten it and are then out there living it? Or is it really all about sitting here and what we do in this context? And I realize it's not, but it oftentimes simply by default had become that was the focus.
Well, still, we hear it all the time from people who've decided not to attend regularly and the disapproval they get from former friends. All of a sudden, you now have done something really, really wrong.
I think that's where the sabbatical suggestion is.
Oh, I think
that's absolutely brilliant.
The unbiased preoccupation is, every God-giving follower of God is in one of these things on Sunday morning. And I think what we've said in the God, maybe some are. Yeah, maybe people. I've got a great email here from Brian I thought I'd read that they found a place they're loving up on. They're gathering together on Sunday morning. I tell you what, when I read his letter, if I knew of a group like this around here getting together on Sunday morning, having fun, loving Jesus, I'd be with them. I got to tell you, I would. Number one, I don't want to run one of those, so I don't want to start one. I've been to a number of them in our area, and I sit there and go, man, I can't even get through this. It's just hard. It's just tradition. But it's not life-giving in that sense. I'd love to know some of the people there. But he wrote this: I've been listening to the God Journey podcast. Must say I feel very refreshed. It's been a year since I've joined a wonderful church family whose focus is summed up in two words: enjoy Jesus. I received the gospel there and have only been recently learning about the reality of Jesus' finished work. Until recently, it did not occur to me that even while I was with my church and learning about the good news, there remained a strange Pharisaical notion of God in my heart, probably from my previous 14 years of culturally acceptable and religious Christianity. What bondage that has been. God has been guiding me into a place. I feel like the past 2 years of my life should be given the name damage control. I grew up legalistic, fearing expectations. I attended a college ministry and also conveyed a works mentality. My life has been all about sin management, effort, and even though I almost academically and cognitively knew about grace and perfection. While I heard the good news, I always had to try and get it right and make sure my theology was on point. When other people had different ideas, I felt threatened and attempted so hard to fix it. Even though I received the good news, I never really enjoyed it. Hearing your conversation with you and Brad is quite refreshing. I'm amazed at how good God is, period, and how his love for me has never, ever changed.
That's good. Awesome.
That's good stuff.
See, I think that the desire to find my sense of value, if I can't just get that locked into the fact that, you know what, God just loves you. He just does. It isn't because of something you've done. It isn't because of a report card. It's simply because he does. And it's not just, well, that's just who he is, as if that doesn't have any value, as if there isn't a volitional choice. God doesn't have a choice. He has to love everybody. I don't think that.
I don't either.
I think God volitionally says, no, I do.
I'm especially fond of you. I actually like you.
Yeah, and it's like when that awakens your heart, there's nothing cheap about that grace. That's when all of a sudden it's like the gas finally hits the tank and starts to work, where you're just going like, gosh, that does something in me.
Yeah.
Because I'm not – I don't have to then somehow pay that back. It's not a debt that I've got to then repay God. See, you died for me. You love me. And now I got to spend the rest of my life paying you back for that. I think a lot of people do that.
We're taught to. I think that's a lot of what Christianity as a religion needs from people. It needs your tail in a pew, your signature on a check, and your being supportive of the programs we're trying to run here. And like you said about the pastor guy earlier, I think people who get in those, their sense of success is earned by their deal being successful. The fruitfulness of people growing and money growing and building and numbers growing. And when that's threatened, I don't think people step back and say, could this be that I'm just doing what God's called me to do with the people he's given me for as long as he's given me to be part of their lives? And no, it didn't. It wasn't meant to be a permanent engagement or a permanent ritual. And I tell you, there is a certain point at which, sitting through a service on Sunday morning, I have heard everything I'm going to hear here. I've already heard it.
But it's not that you're done learning.
No, it's just I've done learning there.
Yeah. I mean, I think you look at that, it's like, I do think some of the gatherings that people do for the purpose of conferring information, some of those are fantastic. Some of those are very entertaining. Some of those are, I mean, you're like, wow, that's wonderful. I think that's great. That service was fantastic. I don't need to rate it, but it's like, you know, you go see a movie. I really go to be entertained. And I learn stuff because I'm a learner. You can have the same person watch the same movie who isn't coming as a learner, and they I didn't get it. I don't really care. It really has everything to do with what's growing in me.
Or even I thought it was hilarious, but I didn't get anything out of it. It didn't inspire me. It didn't encourage me to anything. Yeah, people do that too.
Yeah, and it's like, I think most all of this really has to do with that personal journey anyways. Am I following my shepherd? Am I growing in that? Not, am I being validated by the group I belong to, or the events I attend, or the service record that I amass? It's more like, am I in relationship with someone that I'm in love with and following?
And I wish so many of these pastor guys would see, because most of them I meet, talk to, many of them aren't just about making the Sunday morning deal successful. They really want to help people grow. But they think they do it in a sermon. I mean, I did for years. I did for years. I'm
just
teaching.
Heard this.
I'm teaching something from the Bible. I'm giving you three steps tomorrow to live this out. By Monday, you will be changed. And I bought into that paradigm. That's true. Even though it never worked. People I taught to do things.
God uses the foolishness of preaching.
Weren't doing things. But the really, if you could just take these people and say, listen, 90% of helping people grow in Christ, and I don't like this word, but it kind of says where I'm going, is mentoring. It's you take somebody and you walk alongside them for a while. It's not that you fill their head full of sermons and theological facts. It really is, this is how to listen to Jesus. This is how to follow Jesus. This is how to, you know, connect with him and be real. This is how to live inside grace instead of the performance things going on in your life. I'm teaching my granddaughter to fly right now. And it is a hoot. I'm a pilot nut. I don't know if I've shared this before on the podcast. Now, I got my pilot's license when I was 17. Haven't been pilot in command of an aircraft since like 24, 23. I just haven't had the money. It's too expensive of a hobby. But
they got programs on computers now.
Oh, they've got a program. Not only a program, they've got an actual controlled yoke with the steering wheel, and you pull in, you pull out to climb, you push in to go down. And my granddaughter, my little 4-year-old, came in here one day and saw me doing it. She said, "Grandpa, I want to fly." And I said, "Okay, come on." She jumps up on my lap, and I am teaching little Amy how to fly an airplane. And this is pretty realistic. Now, this is a simulator program that the commercial version, you can actually get flight time. So this is a pretty incredible program. And the control stuff works great. And I'll just tell you, honey, you can hit that mountain now. And she just pulls back on the yoke, and she climbs up over this mountain. And we're going to turn left and go over there. And
you're going to hit that mountain.
But it reminded me when I flew, the real, I would think the passion of an instructor is when you crawl out of the airplane and watch your student fly alone. I mean, isn't that the pinnacle of teaching? The pinnacle of teaching is not, I'm going to sit here
you
next to
me.
You for the rest of your life. Yeah, you need me.
You need me.
You crash this thing without me. I know you will.
Need me.
You
can.
And instead of just, boy, the celebration. I remember the day I soloed. The happiest guy at the airport was my instructor. I took the plane around the pattern and landed it myself. And it wasn't, oh, now you're not going to need me anymore. Now you don't care.
You've left us.
It's just no good. Yeah, you've left me.
You left us.
Instead, he was the happiest guy in the lot on the airport. Just, man, you did it. Great landing.
It all finally worked.
Yeah. And I think if we could get that, to me, Jesus, if he demonstrated anything, it's that we're not learning things in lectures. We learn them in life. It's at the point of discouragement, or with James and John when they're trying to be the top guys in the kingdom. This is when Jesus is going to say, well, let's talk about this. Is this who you really is this the cup you really want to drink from? Is this how you really want to live? And it's really not mine to give, and that's not what leadership is all about. I think we've abandoned the teachable moments of brothers and sisters walking together for the lectured moments of, I learned some facts, I learned some things I should be doing.
Well, because it's notes in my journal, somehow I know it.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, I mean, I believe you can learn great things. I've sat in mesmerizing sermons where you're just going like, that just blew my mind. That was amazing. That insight was wonderful. Thank you. But it doesn't become life reproducing until it's lived out. It's just notes in a journal, and as great as that is, I got shelves full of notes. I'm a great note taker.
I've seen that.
And if I was the complete embodiment of all the notes I have taken, I don't know what you would call me, but I'd have enough degrees behind my name to be a thermometer. It's like, the reality is, it's lived out truth. That's the only truth that's absolutely relevant to me, is when it's lived out.
And I think what's valuable in the lectured moments, I wouldn't say they're valueless. I'm just saying we're putting everything there.
Yeah, we've made that the pinnacle.
What is valuable in that moment, I think the same thing as writing a book or reading a book, is when you read something that expresses what you already knew, what God's already shown you, but you hadn't put words around it yet. You hadn't. It's that aha, this is it.
Yeah, the light bulb comes on.
That's where there's great value in those things. But in the long run, to help people really get a journey, it's not by giving them the rules every day. I've said this so often about flying. I had to take ground school when I took my pilot training. There's a lot you can learn in ground school. I learned about weather and instrumentation and flight controls and characteristics of an airplane, what makes it lift, what makes it go down.
But it's not flying.
But one thing didn't do was learn how to fly. You got to get in a plane. And hopefully with somebody next to you that says, I know how to do this. And with Amy sitting in my lap, and she's never going to crash, even that little plane. I mean, she likes flying. There's a bridge back in this little mountain pass. She likes flying down a little mountain pass, because I showed her how to do this, and fly under this bridge. And then you've got to pull up fast and gut out of there to get out from under the bridge before you hit the mountain coming back on the backside. And she just loves it. It's just, let's go fly under the bridge, Grandpa. So, and I'm doing it with her, and I'm sitting there. She's in my lap. She's doing all the controls, because this is not a real flight thing where I've got a separate set of controls over there.
Right.
But I'm just always got my hand around hers on the deal, and if she's not doing what she needs to do to survive, I'm going to do what she needs to do. I'm going to pull it up a little bit. I'm going to turn it. We must have done 20 landings together. And she's actually, every time we do it, I'm doing less and less of the work. She's getting to where she gets it down the middle of that runway, where she can start pulling back when it gets low. Because I wait to see how much she's willing to do and how much she's learning. And I'm amazed.
I think
four-year-old
in life and development in our relationship with God is such a parallel to that. I mean, the reality is I will never do the work of my salvation. But you look at that verse of work out your salvation with fear and trembling. It's like, okay, I am engaged. There's no way to parse the Greek and get away from the fact that I'm engaged in this gift that was given to me, and it is having an outworking of reality in my life. I can either involve myself in that process, or I can not. But I don't think growth really happens if I'm not engaged. If Amy was just always watching you, watching Grandpa fly, Amy would not be able to fly.
Right.
It's only in the actual engaging of that where, sure, you've guided it, but when you let your hands off, that's when Amy is flying.
And that's, to me, the wonder of grace, because I think so many people think grace is about, well, I'm just going to let God do everything. When God's grace is, I want to share with you a way to live and think and love and fulfill everything that I created you to be on the planet. And that doesn't come from me just sitting in the passenger seat watching God do everything.
That comes
from me doing with him the things he's excited to share with me.
Yeah.
And that's not the obligation of God's giving me good works to do. I must go do them.
No, it's not.
And you will be happy.
It's not doing it for him. And it's not him doing it all. It's that
us,
life with him.
Yeah. And that's how we learn this journey. That's how we learn life. That's how we learn that grace is not just about, oh, God does everything. So I just sit at home on my couch every Sunday morning because I don't need to go to church anymore because I'm just a great believer now and I'm sitting on my couch staring at the woods.
See, well, and the reason is because it's not about sitting in meetings. It's about relationship. You don't graduate from relationship. I maybe graduate from my dependence on someone who is more learned than I. Maybe there's that sense of, gosh, now I get to walk alongside, as opposed to always taking my cues from somebody else. It's more like, thank you for modeling for me what it looks like to walk with God.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to walk with God as opposed to just walk with you.
Right.
And it's like it doesn't. Neither of those are invalid, but it's like, guess what? If I never get to that place where it's me engaging directly with God, if I always have some mediator, and that's somebody other than Jesus,
yeah,
then you got problems.
Always. And to know that Jesus wants us learning to live inside. I think one of the greatest moments in Genesis is God saying to Adam, why don't you name the animals? Do you think God didn't have names in mind when he made the animals? He might have had names in mind even. But you know what he said to Adam is, go ahead, I'll call them what you call them. So go ahead and name them.
That's pretty...
Isn't that mind-blowing? Not
yeah.
God the little micromanaged the whole creation.
Oh, you got that one wrong.
Yeah, that wasn't going to be a giraffe. That was going to be a long-necked buzzard. And, you know, it's just, God really enjoys us. Even when love in our heart is overwhelmed, we're overwhelmed with love for somebody that maybe we've just met, but there's somehow a connection in our heart of, gosh, I want to help them in some way. And then it's, God, what should I do? Well, do what's in your heart to do. It's not that God
and don't
has
shoot on yourself.
It's not this little, I've got this little, there's only one thing that'll make, and I know so many people who are praying with a loved one for healing or going through some difficult situation, trying to find a job in this horrible economy we're in. And the thought is, if I just did something right, I'm not getting right, then this would work out. Instead of, there's a God with you in this. Do what's in your heart to do. Go, ask, seek, find, knock. All those things we get to do alongside him, watching for his breath in it, listen, following him. That Awakening to His Voice podcast we did a few weeks ago. Man, I've got a lot of email from that. How much people appreciated that whole doc. Some didn't appreciate it. Some were saying, oh, you're saying God can't have a conversation with us? Which,
no, that's not what we were saying.
We're saying when people characterize it that way, it often turns off other people who don't find it that way. And so it kind of creates this false dichotomy. We got a letter I thought was interesting. It's from a guy named Critter.
Critter?
Critter. It was on the blog. Actually, it's a blog comment. You can go there and read it if you want. It says, thank you. One of the most balanced discussions I've heard on this topic. I appreciate the way you broke it down in your experience and didn't fall into the religious rigidity that is so prevalent. I came from a background of God doesn't speak today. I didn't buy it. I also didn't buy the flaky stuff that you discussed so lightheartedly. I can relate to the inability to explain such things verbally. Thanks for being so honest and for explaining things with graciousness and humility. Your discussion confirms some of the ways I experience God, too. and you pegged it with that God said performance and the way it is used to manipulate. Part of the power play, of course, is how spiritual the person seems as a result, and also the pride of God said this and God can't be wrong, so neither can I. For me, I was just starting to break out of my shell and getting glimpses of some of this when the ones who heard from God and had even been offered to mentor me in this area ended up kicking me in the teeth and perpetrating false accusations and becoming controlling. As a result, I reacted, pulled back from all God things for a while, and struggled with spiritual PTSD.
What's that?
Oh, that's that post-traumatic stress disorder.
Okay.
I struggle to trust my... This happens to a lot of people. When somebody pulls the God told me have to follow it card...
It's like getting the rug pulled out from underneath.
He said, I struggle to trust my perceptions and my experience in God, in part because of my background, in part because I don't want to turn into one of those perpetrators myself. In my head, I know God is not like that, and hearing God doesn't necessitate becoming a spiritual abuser. I know I need to learn to live loved, but I'm not sure how to get there from here. The shack at least started me talking to Papa occasionally again, and hearing Paul talk so transparently about his history has given me some hope for recovery, and I'm thankful for that too.
You know, I think one of the things that I enjoyed so much out of just the story in the shack is God doesn't force his way on us. I know that, but it was neat to see that reinforced, where there's a sense of going like, you know what? God doesn't pull the trump card. We do on each other.
All the time.
But he doesn't do that. Because and why doesn't he? Because I think God is wanting the genuineness that comes out of our volitional heart. He wants us to agree from the heart. It's not enough to have somebody, okay, I mean, I'm trying to work with my
kids.
It's
not enough just to go along, just to resign, oh, crud, okay, well, you're the big guy.
There's no joy in that. If relationship is the focus, there's no joy even in obedience if it doesn't come out of agreement in the heart. You know, I might be able to direct your behavior and keep you from killing yourself, and that's a good result, but if relationship is my real longing, and you're just going to go through the motions, there's no intimacy. There's no trust. There's no enjoyment of relational stuff if I just get your outward behavior.
Yeah, and how much spiritual manipulation? Just what he said goes on when people say, look, God told me this for you. This is for your good. And you don't even get to talk about it or discuss it because, you know what, God told me. So you don't even get to talk to me. That subverts exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah,
how do we live inside hard agreement with people who are going to manipulate that way?
You can't. I mean, the best you can do is tolerate that. But the reality is that I think when you start to grow and understand the dynamics of communication, I look at the Pharisees. I mean, they get a bum rap in the scriptures. It's the one group that Jesus, you know, lays it out on. But the reality is I don't think Jesus didn't have love for them.
Nope.
I'll bet you he looked upon them, you know, it's that sense of how a chick, you know, how mother hen would have longed to have gathered her chicks. I think she's looking upon that group of people saying, I think you probably mean really well, but you don't understand it. I'm not looking for the outward behaviors. I'm wanting what's in your heart. I'm wanting reality there. I want to know you there. Not I want an army of good little behaved people. I want to know you.
Yeah.
And you can't do that if that ends up from manipulation.
Well, that's what I like with Critter's letter here. There's a balance between, we all get to hear. We all get to follow. We all get to live inside of God. But one of the things I notice about people who really hear from God is that there's a real humility behind it. There's not a, I've heard, this is right. Anybody else who disagrees is a moron. It really is. You know, I think this is what God's saying. What do you think? I think people who are confident God's spoken to them know that that can bear the test of a conversation.
And freeing someone to their own individual conscience. If what I think I've heard, say I heard it with the audible voice or God wrote it with his finger in the cement, okay?
Yep.
Say that was that clear. I still can't force that upon another person and accomplish the ends that God has in mind.
Yeah.
If that person, on their own freedom of conscience, doesn't believe that that's true, I don't think they're supposed to obey it. If whatever we do that is not from faith If Romans defines that's sin, then my trying to force my will on somebody else, I'm violating their conscience. There's no faith in that. If they're afraid of me, which is why they act that way, I've not achieved some godly result.
Exactly.
You can only do this in that humble nature of appeal. It's the only way brothers can work with brothers is in that place of, you know what? I'm a person of convictions. I will hold them firm, but I can't hold you firm in my convictions and think I'm going to get to a good result.
Yeah, ever.
Yeah, I got to walk this out where it's like, you know what? I can invite someone along. I can walk with that. If they choose not to, that's where it's like the scriptures that, well, you know, the watchmen on the wall, their blood is on your – No. It really isn't on my hands. I'm not responsible for somebody else's actions.
That was Ezekiel. That's not you.
No, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like – so you look at that. It's like, well, no, the best I can do is live a life that has within it an appeal and an invitation to say, walk this way.
And to treat other people exactly that same way. I'm not going to make you do. We've been partners here for a while. There's nothing in our relationship that I got to make you do something to satisfy me.
No.
And that's a tremendous freedom to just live inside the growing together and not have to worry about it. So we're coming to the end of another year. And next time we podcast, it will be for the new year.
2009.
Yeah.
Wow.
Doing fine in 2009.
There you go. That's a good little, nice little slogan there, Jake.
So are you a big change of year guy, you know, do this deep introspective prayer kind of see what God has for the new year kind of guy?
I don't think any longer.
No, really?
I'm excited for what this new year holds. I'm excited for a number of the things that are, I think, God's put in my heart to pursue. And so for that, there's a real sense of anticipation. Yeah. I'm looking forward to a lot of wonderful things. You're just like, gosh, I wonder what God's going to do with that. I wonder how to partner in. But I sort of don't have this sense of burden that I've got to go through this massive reexamination and I've got to set these goals.
Set the goals for the new year.
It's like, you know what? I really don't think I'm in charge of all that. And if I could accurately define those, I'm not all that confident in my capacity to pull them off.
I find myself, I think, a little more introspective in two ways. I kind of look back on this is a good time to look back on the year that was. And, gosh, so many things this past year to be grateful for and excited about. And Sarah and I did a little mini podcast on the Lifestream blog just for folks that frequent there just to kind of bring Sarah in. She's been such a part of this year in a way she has not been for a while. And it's been wonderful. We've loved it. I love that. I love, you know, looking at our family and the growing kids and adult children and what they're into. And all that's good. And then I do like just saying, God, if there's anything you want to unload in my heart. And I find like God drops some wonderful little phrases in our hearts at times that we don't even know what they're for when they unfold. We just don't. And yet somehow in the year ahead, kind of like on this podcast, I mean, we'll make some joke at the beginning of a podcast. And then toward the end of it, it's kind of like that really is the theme of what we've been talking about here.
Yeah.
And I'm not a big on I'm going to take 2 days out and fast and pray and bang heaven's gates for a plan for 2009. My plans have never worked. But I do like just kind of have a little bit different ear just listening and say, God, there's anything that you want to put on my heart to help me understand how the year's going to unfold. You know, it's noisy in here. We got a fax machine going, garage doors opening and closing, phones ringing, dogs barking.
Sorry for the background.
We've had to stop and reload this a number of times. Sorry about that. Hope you're not too distracted by the background noises. But, man, I hope you all who have made so many people that have ended up finding this podcast and even more over the last year. And just pray that your own God journey, the year ahead for you, would be just filled with hope and life and joy, and that God is going to take you through whatever it is that you're going through, change you a little more in the process, and make you more gentle and a better lover of people in the world. And
you know what? I want to say thank you to this wide conversation community. I don't know who they are. I mean, I respond to a couple emails. I get
you
far
did.
More than
you did. I
saw
him respond to one this week. I just about fell out of my chair.
But, you know, I think the thing that I'm so thrilled about is that somehow something that began as a little idea. I remember you and I were down in Camarillo. We had stopped off at it was a McDonald's. having a Diet Coke.
Ah, hallelujah.
And you laid out this little idea, as opposed to doing this, you know, big broadcast thing, why don't we just do this? And it was one of those, why don't we?
Right.
And it just seemed right. And I look at, there has been a life that has been breathed into this that hasn't been hard or painstaking. You're just going like, there's a community of people out there that are enjoying a journey that the big shepherd's leading them on. And to be able to share in some of that, I mean, some of the emails that you get that where people are just sharing some of that journey, I find that so amazing and so delightful. We're just going like, I've never met this person. I don't know them. Somehow they've taken the time to stop and share some of their story. And I'm just going like, my life is enriched. You're just going like, no way. That's amazing. And so for all the people out there that are our brothers and sisters, thank you.
Amen.
This is an absolute thrill to be on a journey with you and to be able to share in that. And if there's any value that's come out of what we've talked about, great. But there's just a sense of, you know what, I don't feel alone. I feel like there's something wonderful that's taking place, and this is just a tiny expression of that.
Yeah, we kind of sometimes have ragged on the forum when it's kind of gone a little wacko at times. And I think in the last few weeks, there's actually I've been able to get over there a little more frequently, so I haven't been on the road as much. See some wonderful things being shared between people and been very encouraged by that conversation that goes on around this. So, you know, sometimes it's kind of like just a whole bunch of garbage, and sometimes it's really good. And last few days, I think, or last week or so, it's made some good connections for folks. So we love you. Love the folks that participate here at the God Journey, and hopefully, God willing,
we'll see you in the new year.
See you in the new year.
Part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.